Today's share is Masechta Ksubos, Daf Ayin Tes, and we will begin on Daf Ayin Ches on the base, three lines from the bottom. Hahi itasa the boy to Tavrinu Lenichsa Megavra. There was a woman who was about to get married, and she wanted to keep her Nichsa Melug, as we discussed in the previous share. The halacha is that the Nichsa Melug, the Peiris, the prophet of the Nichsa Melug, belonged to a woman's husband. This woman wanted to not have her husband enjoy those produce that profits from the Nechsi Melug. So she came up with the following way of keeping her husband not to have rights to these Nechsi Melug. And that was Ksiftina Liberta. She wrote over all of her Nechasim as a gift to her daughter. And we have here a very fundamental machlokes Rashi in Tosfos and how to understand the Gemara. Rashi explains that when she gave her daughter these nechasim as a gift, she explicitly told her daughter, I'm giving it to you because I don't want my husband to have rights for payris of these nechasim. Tosfos and most Rishonim disagree with Rashi, for they say if the wife was so clear in her intention that she was trying to have to avoid her husband having rights to these payris, there would be no discussion that we're going to Mitzvah Shem learn in today's sugya if it was a gift, if it's not a gift. Rather, most Rishonim explain that without her saying anything to the daughter, it's obvious that her intent was just to prevent her husband from having rights to these assets. And therefore, if the marriage will terminate, she'll get divorced, she intends to retrieve these nechasim. Tosfos himself brings up the concept that don't we know that throughout Shas, the halach is, Dvarim shebelev, enim dvarim. And just because we know or think that this was a person's intent, that isn't enough. Why over here are we relying on the Dvarim Shebelev? And says Tosfos, this concept of Dvarim Shebelev Enim Dvarim is only in a situation where it's not 100% obvious and clear what is the person's intention. But as in the case that we are now discussing, where it's so obvious and clear what was this woman's intention, there is no question, and we follow the Dvarim, we understand and we know what she meant. Similar concept we find in Halacha regarding a Matana Shchimera, that a person who's deathly ill, we've learned so many times there are special Halachas that apply regarding his ability to give gifts that are not the usual Halacha, and furthermore, he could retract on the giving of the gift, again, because we recognize that he only gave the gift because he's Rachman Otzlan, a Shchimera. Says the Rashba, based on Tosfos' understanding, so this Gemara is only referring to a woman who is already engaged to a man, and therefore to avoid her husband being able to have the rights of the Nechse Melug, she does what we're going to be discussing in our Gemara. But if a woman is not engaged, so there's no reason to understand that that is her intent, and the dinim would be very different. However, the Avni Meluim points out, the Rashba doesn't necessarily have to be speaking about a case where the woman is actually engaged. If the woman is actively seeking a husband and hopes to accomplish that in the very near future, that alone is already considered that she's already preparing for that eventuality of being married and having the nechasim and needs to protect her nechasim. So Intsava, so she wrote over her assets to her daughter, and then Vigarsha, and she got divorced. And she now comes to her daughter and requests back those properties. Asla kamed Rav Nachman, so the daughter and the mother came to Rav Nachman, and Kara Rav Nachman l'shtar. Rav Nachman ripped up the shtar because he said it's obvious that the shtar was never meant that the property should become the daughter's under all circumstances. Clearly, the intention was just as long as this mother is married to this man, to avoid having the man have the rights to the payrus, and now the properties revert back to the mother. There's an interesting machloikus rishonim. What is the status of the payrus? During the marriage, these properties produced fruit. Who is the owner of the fruit? Rashi and most rishonim hold that the mother is the owner of the fruit, because the gift was never a gift. The Rosh and other rishonim say that the daughter, the one that had the gift, that had this property, is at least entitled to the payrus. And in fact, the Mefarshim ask, according to this opinion, why did Reb Nachman rip up the shtar? Because as the Rishonim explained, the reason Reb Nachman ripped up the shtar is because the shtar that is invalid should be ripped up. But this shtar is not totally invalid. It does serve a purpose. It serves the purpose, according to these Rishonim, that the daughter should be allowed to eat the payrus until the mother requests back the properties. So the Rishonim answer that two answers. One answer is given that since the purpose of the shtar is primarily that the properties should be the daughter's, and that is no longer the case, so we rip up the shtar, even though there is an auxiliary purpose in the shtar about the payrus. Another tarus that I saw the Rishonim give is because what is the concern? As we will learn in the sugya, we're concerned that the husband is going to come with a claim, but now that this marriage terminated, the husband has no right to claim anything anymore, and therefore the daughter has no need to have a shtar that she had a right to eat the payrus. So Rav Nachman ripped up the shtar because he considered that the property were only given to the daughter for the reason that the husband shouldn't be able to receive the payrus. Now that the marriage is over, the properties revert back to the mother. Also, Rav Nachman came to Marukva. So Rav Anan went to Marukva. Omalei, Chazi Mar, Namen Chaklo, Hechimak Rishtari de Inshi. Does Rav Marukva see Harav Nachman, who's a Chaklo? And he used a very sharp word. He called him a peasant. And the reason he used this word is Chas V'Shalom not to denigrate Rav Nachman, but to point out that Rav Nachman is not an expert in the halacha. Amalei, how is he tearing up shtaros? Amalei, emalei easy gufa of the hachihava. So Marukva asked Rav Onan to tell him exactly what happened here. Amalei hachva hachivahava. So he repeats to him the entire episode. Amalei shtam avreches kamrit. This was a shtam avreches, a document that was only written to keep the husband away from the property. Hachi amrav chneloi bar idi amishmul moira hayroani. So wait, Rashi explains that he said that he was a moira hayro. He had received authorization from the Resh Galusa to paskin dinei mominus, and the halacha is this authorization gives the judge immunity from having to compensate the party if he paskened incorrectly. That's one pshat. The Ritva has a girsa miyira hayroani. Even though I'm typically a person who's frightened, who's concerned not to say a psak, here I could tell you unequivocally, im yovishtam avrechas liyadai, if a shtam avrechas comes to my hand, akreno, I will rip it up. The shtam avrechas has no validity. And it's interesting to point out that the Chafetz Chaim and the Ber Maim Chaim uses this Gemara to teach us Hilchas Lashon Hara. He says, all too often we believe, if we don't learn the Halacha, the Lashon Hara means that if you say anything improper about someone else, you've said Lashon Hara. So he says, look at our Gemara. Rav Anan is coming to Marukva, and according to Rav Anan's understanding, Rav Nachman did something very wrong in ripping up the shtar. Yet Rav Anan is coming to Marukva and repeating what happened, and Marukva is listening. So he says, from here we see that given that Mar Ukva was the Rosh Bezdin, he was the responsible party to make sure that Halacha was being followed properly. For someone to come and report to Rav Anon something happened improperly is not wrong at all. But he goes further to say, but we have to also observe Mar Ukva's actions. What Mar Ukva did was not just accept what Rav Anon said. He asked and tried to investigate and explore exactly what happened, because that was his responsibility. And he truly heard the entire story and then was able to say what he felt. But Rav Moshe takes this concept of when is it considered Lashon Hara and when is it not considered Lashon Hara somewhat further. Rav Moshe discusses a shaila of where there's a teacher of a class, and one of the students, he walks into the class and he notices that a student did something improper, but he doesn't know which student is the one that did it. So he wants and he demands that the students in the class disclose to him who was this one that did something improper. Says Rav Moshe, a teacher should not act that way. Because even though we're learning now in the Gemara that one can go and report something was done wrong, if it's lutayelis, if there's a purpose to be served, that's if the person comes and volunteers. But for someone to try to elicit this information, says Rav Moshe, particularly in the setting of chinuch, where maybe the teacher is interested in finding out who did this improper act in order to properly be mechanech this person. But he says the downside of the teaching children and students that Lashon Hara can be said and that Lashon Hara should be elicited is worse than the benefit of learning who did this wrong thing and trying to have him improve. Amalei Ravel Rav Nachman. Says Rav to Rav Nachman, why is a shtar mavreches not considered a valid shtar? Tamamai, the leshovik inif shnaf shiviyav lachrini. A person is not going to leave himself completely without any property. So we see if a person gave away all of his property, it must be that he really didn't mean it. Asked the Gemara, Hani Mililachuni. If someone gave his property to someone else, so there we could understand that a person would not just give away all of his property and leave himself with nothing. Avalabarta Yehiva. In our Gemara, she gave the gift to her daughter. And since she gave it to the daughter, can't we suggest that perhaps she meant it as a real gift? Says the Gemara, Afila Hochi, but Malkam Barta Nafshi Yavala. As much as a parent wants to give a child a gift, the parent doesn't want to be left with nothing. So if the situation here is that she was being left with nothing, it can't be a valid shtar. Meisvei asked the Gemara, how could Shmuel say that a shtar mavreches is automatically invalid? It says in the Braisa, haroitzah shetavriach nechasa mibala, if somebody wants to keep a property away from a husband, ketzer oisa, what should she do? Kesevah shtar pasim lacherim. She should write a shtar pasim. Pasim means pius, to try to get the person to do her a favor, to try to get the person who receives it to do her a favor and accept and be the recipient of her properties, so that the husband should not be allowed to eat the nechse, the peiris. Divrei Rav Shimon Gamliel. V'chama imrim, v'chama disagree. Ratzo metzachet ba, the recipient who receives this shtar can laugh at the giver and keep the property forever. Atcha techtav loy, unless the giver writes into the shtar, m'hayoyim ulchash eretza, that the gift is only effective when I approve it. As a machlokes rishonim, how to understand this? Some rishonim say that it requires the active confirmation of the person who's giving the gift to say, at this point, I want this to be effective. And without that active confirmation, the shtar is considered meaningless. Others say just the opposite, that it's considered effective unless she protests and says that I don't want it to be effective. But what do we see here? Tam the kasvalei hachi, only because this clause was added into the shtar. Halay kasva hachi, if this stipulation was not included in the shtar, kanini l'kayach, it is considered a valid shtar. How does the Gemara suggest that it's automatically ripped it up? And Mefarshim asks, the Shita asks, why does the Gemara have to repeat the words, the kasvalei hacha, halay kasvalei hacha? We should have just said, we see that according to the Chachamim, the shtar is a valid shtar. Says the Shita, the Gemara is coming to show how far the opinion of the Chachamim go. And that the Chachamim hold that the stipulation has to be added, but not only is it adequate, not only is it necessary for the stipulation to be added, the stipulation has to be clearly written. Anything less will not be considered a stipulation. Also, the Shita says, it's obvious that the Gemara did not want to answer that Shmuel follows the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel, who holds that every shtar mavreches is considered not a valid shtar, because obviously Shmuel is going to follow the opinion of the Chachamim, not the opinion of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Amar Rav Zeir, so he answers Rav Zeir, loy kasha, habakula. Shmuel is referring to a situation where a woman gave away all of her property. In that case, we could automatically assume that the gift is not real, that the shtar is void. Habe Mektsasa, the brayse that we just learned, that starts questioning perhaps a shtar mavreches is indeed a valid shtar, is referring where only part of the property was given away. She's still holding on to some property, and therefore, unless she makes the stipulation, say the Chachamim that the shtar is a valid shtar. There's a interesting shaila in the Rishonim. What makes it be considered Mektsasa? Some Rishonim suggest that as long as she leaves over some property that she did not include in the shtar, that proves that the shtar is a valid shtar unless the stipulation is included. Others say that just because she leaves over a small amount of property for herself, that doesn't validate the shtar. She has to leave over enough assets that she can live on. Ask the Gemara if Shmuel is telling us that the shtar is a void shtar. A shtar mavreches is void, v'ilay kaninu l'keach, so that the daughter never really received these properties, nikninu baal. So that means that this remained the woman's all along. If it remained the woman's all along, the husband should be entitled to the produce as the produce of the nichsei melug. Amar Abaya answers Abaya, osu k'nechosim sh'eni yidum labal. V'aliv d'Rav Shimon. Yesterday in the Mishnah, and at the end of the Shir in the Gemara, we explained the opinion of Rav Shimon, who said that even though the husband is entitled to the payers of the Nichsei Melug, Rav Shimon said that that is only the payers of the Nichsei Melug that the husband is aware of. Any Nichsei Melug that the husband is not aware of, he's not entitled to the payers. And as we explained in the Shir, the reason for Rav Shimon is because the only reason Chazal gave him the payers is because to avoid any resentment. But what he's not aware of, if he's not aware of these payers, if not aware of these properties, there won't be any room for resentment. Says the Gemara, since the wife wrote over these assets to the daughter, even though we're learning now that those assets are not going to be the shtar is not really valid, that doesn't change the din that the husband doesn't get the profit from these assets. There is a machlokes rishonim. What will be the halacha regarding the yerusha of these assets? That the halacha we know is that a husband yarshins a wife if she predeceases him. So what will be the halacha according to Rav Shimon, where they are nichsim melug owned by the wife that the husband is not aware of? Or the Gemara that we're discussing now, there are nichsim melug that the husband wrote over to her daughter with an invalid shtar. Will the husband have the right, will the husband yarshin those nichsim melug as he typically inherits nichsim melug? Or the halacha that a husband inherits a wife not apply to assets that he's not aware of, just like the halacha according to Rav Shimon is that he doesn't receive peiros from assets that he's not aware of. And this is the halacha. However, the Rishonim point out that now that Al Gemara added in explaining why a shtar mavreches is void, the concept, because it's like nechasim she'enim yiduim, perhaps say the Rishonim, a shtar mavreches should only be effective when a wife writes over the nechsim maluk to someone else to avoid her husband getting the payrus of the nechsim maluk. But why would be the halacha if someone owes someone else money and he doesn't want that the creditor should be able to take hold of his assets, and he writes over his assets to someone else? Well, we don't have this concept of nechashim she'enim yiduim. Maybe there a shtar mavreches should be not effective, or maybe it should be effective. So the Ramah paskins that if we see such a situation of a shtar mavreches in a situation where someone owes someone else money, we have to investigate and examine and analyze the situation. And if we see that it was clearly done as a harama, it was done just as a way of avoiding payment, then the halacha is that the shtar is void. If on the other hand it could be argued that this was a real gift, then the shtar is effective. In a situation where we can't really make a determination, so say the Paiskim, we look who is holding on to these assets, and if the recipient was holding on to the properties, he is the muchzik, and the creditors cannot collect their debt from those assets. So the Mishnah continues discussing the halachas of nechsei melug, and says the Mishnah, nafla nechasim, if properties fell, the woman received nechsei melug, she inherited money, the halachas yilakach ben karka v'oichel peiros. The halacha is that he buys property with this money, and with that money, and the husband receives the produce, and the wife receives the keren, the principal is the wife's. And as the sheet explains, what the Gemara is teaching us here is the husband cannot say that, you know what, I'd rather invest the money where I don't have to spend so much toil and tircha in growing fruit. The wife could say, no, I demand that you use the money for karka, which is a safer and longer enduring investment. Peiros ha'tlush mekarka. If a wife inherited detached fruit, so that detached fruit has the status of nechsei melug, which the halacha of nechsei melug is yilakach ben karka v'oichel peiros. Peiros ha'mechubarim lekarka. What happens if she inherited produce that's still attached to the ground? Amrameya. So Rameya says, how do we view these peiros? So certainly, in understanding Rameya's opinion, any incremental value that will come to these peiros after the marriage takes place is considered peiros that belong to the husband. But what about the peiros as they are now attached to the ground, what grew beforehand? So that, Rameya says, is considered principal. And therefore, Rameya says, we follow the following process. Shamra Yisakami Yofa Beperis. We appraise the land and determine how much it's worth with this produce on it. The Kamihi Yofa Beloy Peris. And how much it's worth without the produce on it. Or Meiser, the difference that this land is worth between having Peris on it and not having Peris is considered nechsei melug, with which yilakach ben karka, property should be bought for oichel peiros. Becham have an easier method. Have mechubarim bekarka shaloi. Anything that's attached to the ground is considered his. According to the Chachamim, even crops that were already growing in the field that at the time the wife received them are considered produce and the land is considered the principal. Vatulushim in a karka, anything that's detached from the ground is considered hers. And in fact, the Shita asks, why does the Mishnah have to repeat this then? We know that the halacha is that nichsim melug are sold for oichel peiris. And the Shita says that the Mishnah just repeats it to keep it uniform. Another terrace that the Shita tries to say is that perhaps one would want to differentiate between fruit that's attached to the ground but no longer needs the ground, and therefore maybe is considered detached. That's what the Mishnah is teaching us. Only fruit that's attached to the ground, that still needs the ground to nourish it, are considered peiris. Fruit that, even though it's attached to the ground, but no longer needs the ground for nourishment, is no longer considered peiris, but rather considered karka. Says Rav Shimon Omer, Makom Shiyofa Koich B'Nisasoi, where the husband has an advantage at the time they get married, Hura Koich B'Nisasoi, he gets a disadvantage when they divorce. And Makom Shura Koich B'Nisasoi, where he has a disadvantage at the time of marriage, Yofa Koich B'Nisasoi, he has an advantage when they get divorced. Kate said, what does Rav Shimon mean? Peres HaMechubarim L'Karka, the peres that are attached to the ground. So as we just learned, b'knisasa, when they get married, are considered shaloi. They're considered peiros. Ubitziyasa, however, when they divorce, shalo. They're considered hers. And any peiros that are attached to the ground are considered nichsi melug, and she receives them when they get divorced. And Rabbi Chanan asks, if these peiros are his, and it's only because they're getting divorced that she loses them, where does the halacha change? What transfers them from being his? As the peiros were growing, they were his, and just because they get divorced, they're hers. Says Rabbi Chanan, a very important concept in understanding the husband's rights to peiros. Rabbi Chanan says the husband's rights to peiros do not mean that the husband is the full-fledged owner of the peiros. Rather, says Rabbi Chanan, what it means is that the husband has temporary ownership. That temporary ownership is defined that he has the right to eat the peiros. But if the marriage ends, that temporary ownership also terminates, and therefore the peiros are hers. Vaksulushim in a karka, produce that was detached from the ground, b'knisasa, when they get married, if they were detached, they're considered hers, they're considered karen, the principal, or b'tziyasa, but if they get divorced, they're already considered fully his, and they belong to him, even though they're getting divorced. Shalai. And the Gemara will ask, actually, what is the difference between the opinion of the Chachamim and Reb Shimon? Says the Gemara, Pshita, it's obvious. Arabati. So the way Rashi explains the Gemara is that there's a debate between the husband and wife. They have these nichsei melug that our Mishnah says are to be sold, and that the peiros are kept to the husband. And there's a debate between the husband and wife, what should they buy with it? One spouse wants to buy land, and one wants to buy houses. So Ara, buying a house, is buying land is preferable over buying a house. Because the reason is, land is more enduring, houses could collapse, and also more profitable. From a house, you could collect rent, but you have to have a tenant. Here, the land constantly produces produce, and therefore that's considered the better investment. Bati vidikli, one spouse wants to buy houses, and the other one wants to buy palm trees. Bati, houses are considered more profitable because the date tree could dry out. Dikli vialani, one wants to buy palm trees, and one wants to buy other kind of fruit trees. Dikli, palm trees are considered longer lasting and more profitable. Ilani v'gifni, one wants to buy fruit trees, and one wants to buy the other a grapevine. The loch is ilani. Fruit trees are considered more profitable and more enduring. Grapevines are considered particularly sensitive and not necessarily long lasting. Abizardus or pair of the kavri. So here we have a machlokus Rashi and Tosfos, how to understand this Gemara. We're going to learn the Gemara, of course, as Rashi explains the Gemara, but we're also going to mention Tosfos' opinion for a moment. Rashi explains that the Gemara that Gemara is trying to identify if the items that fall here are considered keren, or the items that that the Gemara is now going to identify are considered peros. That means, if it's considered something that's keren, if it's considered something that produces produce, that produces profit, so then the keren remains and the peros go to the husband. If it's not considered that type of an asset, then it should be sold and buy with it that type of an asset that produces profit. So the question is, Abizardisa, if a woman inherited a forest of sorb trees, which the tree itself, the fruit itself, is not considered valuable, and therefore typically these trees were knocked down for timber, were cut for timber. And in fact, the Pais can prove from here that even though we know there's a halacha that we're not allowed to cut a fruit tree, the halacha is, however, if the fruit tree doesn't really give off valuable fruit, and the cost of maintaining the tree is more than the value of the fruit that the tree will produce, then the tree may be cut. So, Abris Azadis or Peri the Kavri, Amrle Peri, some say the wood of the tree, a Peri the Kavri means a fish pond, some say the wood of the tree and the fish of the pond are considered produce, Vamrle Karna, and some say they're considered principal. Why are they considered principal? Klal of the Milsa, because the rule is Gizei Machlef, if it's something that could regenerate Peri, it's considered produce. And Gizei Machlef, if it's something that cannot regenerate, then it's considered Keren. Now, in our Gemara, since the trees and the fish bands are something that regenerate according to this mandamer, it's considered keren, and that the husband will just get the peiros and we don't sell it. The first mandamer says that since typically we're going to cut the tree down and we're going to remove the fish from the fish pond, that is enough to make it not be considered keren because it's going to be depleted. As I said, Tosfos has a different understanding. Tosfos' understanding of the Gemara is that this Gemara is a continuation of the previous Gemara, that the husband and wife, the husband receives the Nechsim Maluk from the wife to sell, to buy income producing assets, and the question is, are we allowed to buy is he allowed to buy forest or fish ponds? Are they considered assets that may be bought with the Nechsim Maluk? But again, we're going to learn the Gemara like Rashi. Amar Rav Zeira, Amar Rav Oishia, Amar Rav Yanai. V'amri lo, Amar Rav Abba, Amar Rav Oishia, Amar Rav Yanai. Hagoynef, if someone steals Vlad Behemoth Malug, the child of a Malug animal, that means the woman brought into the marriage an animal as Nechsi Malug, and someone steals the child of that animal, so the question, and we know that the halach is that when one steals, he has to pay kefil. The question is, who receives the kefil payment? So he says, Rav Yanai, Misham Teshlumi Kefil Isha. The kefil is paid to the wife. And Rashi explains that the Gemara is assuming that the reason for Rav Yanai is that the produce is considered, that the child is considered principal, since we're concerned that the mother might die, and if the mother dies, the principal is lost. So if somebody steals this offspring before it's sold, he's stealing keren, he's stealing principal, because we're learning that the child is also considered principal. So the victim of this geneva is the wife, and therefore the kefil payment should be made to her. Kaman asked the Gemara that this psak of Rabbi Yanai doesn't follow Loi Rabbanon v'Loi Kechananya, not the opinion of the Rabbanon nor the opinion of Chananya, the Tanya, Behemus Melug Labal, the offspring of a behema that a woman brings into the marriage goes to the husband. V'lat Shifcha, the offspring of a Shifcha that's brought into the marriage goes Leisha. V'Chananya ben Ach Yoshi Omer, also V'lat Shifcha Melug Kvad Behemus Melug. The child of a shivcha is treated like the child of a behema. And we'll explain soon why, what's the basis of their machlokes. But all Tanoim seem to agree that the child of the animal is considered produce. So if it's considered produce, it should go to the husband, because he's the owner of the produce. The kefil should go to the husband, because he's the owner of the produce, not to the wife, because she's the only the owner of the principal. Answers the Gemara, Afilo Taima Divrei Hakol, even if you follow the opinion that the peiros of the Nichsei Melug, the peiros of the animals of Nichsei Melug, are considered peiros, peiros the kinah l'rabbanan. Chazal gave the husband the right to the produce. Peiros the peiros, like the kinah l'rabbanan, the offspring of the offspring. That means kefil, which is only a derivative of these vlodos, the husband doesn't receive. So Tosfos right away asks that we know that the halacha is, we're going to learn a Mishnah, Mitzvah Shem, that actually says it explicitly, that peir the peiros go to the husband. So how could our Gemara say that peir the peiros don't belong to the husband? So there, Tosfos and the Ritva give two different answers to this question. Ritva says that when did Chazal say that Peiros and Peiros the Peiros go to the husband, that's only by Milsa the Shchicha. But something that's common, an animal has children, its children further have children, that's considered common, and that's where Chazal said that those Peiros go to the husband. But that there was a Geneva and that the Kefil should be paid is something that's loy shchiach. There Chazal did not say that it goes to the husband. Tosfos says that the halacha of peiros, or the halacha peir de peiros, only apply, peir de peiros only apply what comes from the offspring itself. That means, if an animal is the keren, the nitzi melug, and then it has a child, that's the peiros. And then that child has another child, that's considered peir de peiros. But, says Tosfos, if the payment comes from an outside source, mi'alma, from the payment of kefil that the ganef is paying, that's not considered the payer of the payers that belong to the husband, rather that belongs to the wife. There's a machloikas rishonim, what will be the halacha if the animal itself was stolen? Who will receive the kefil? Some say that there, the kefil, the keren itself belongs to the wife because she's the owner of the animal, but the kefil is not considered a peira de peira, it's considered a peira of the keren, and it goes to the husband. That's according to Tosfos. But according to the Ritva, who says that the basis of kefil not being paid to the husband is because it's a milsa de lo shchicha, so even though the kefil that's being paid because of the keren, it's not peira de peira, it's only peira, still, since it's a milsad loy shchicha, it will go to the wife, not to the husband. Says the Gemara, Bishlam l'chananya, we can understand Chananya's opinion, that he says that the husband receives the children of the nichsei melug, and of the animal that's nichsei melug, and the children of the shivcha that's nichsei melug, he's not concerned that the mother may die, because as the Rishonim explained, first of all, the animal may outlive the wife, and even if the animal doesn't outlive the wife, the husband may outlive the wife. So therefore, we don't have to be concerned that the animal would die, and if she doesn't have the offspring as a keren, she's left with nothing. El Rabbanan, but we need to understand the opinion of the Rabbanan. Icha shina lamisa, if they're concerned that the animal is going to die, so fil vlad behemus melug namiloi, then they should say that the child of an animal that's nifsim melug should not be considered peiros, they should be considered keren. And if they're not concerned, then even the child of a servant should also be given to the husband, because they're not concerned about the death of the mother. Answers the Gemara. The Chacham are concerned for death. So if they're concerned for death, why is the child of the behemoth considered Paris? Because even if the mother dies, the mother of this animal, the mother of the child, the Nichsi Malug behemoth dies, it's not completely lost, because we could use its hide. On the other hand, when the Shifcha dies, there is no further use for it, and that's why the child of the Shifcha is considered also Karen according to the Chananya. That is the halacha that the husband receives the child of the shifcha, just like it's considered peiros, just like he receives the child of the animal. That's nechsimalok. Amrav Nachman. Even though Shmuel said that the halacha is like Chananya, my the Chananya shem is garsha. The Chananya agrees that when they get divorced, the wife could claim that she wants these children of the Shifchas, and she could pay for them. Noisen and Domiv and Noitelson, she could pay for the Shifchas children and keep them. Neshvach Bei Saviyah. The next Mishnah that we're going to learn is going to teach us a concept of Shvach Bei Saviyah, that something that belongs to a father's home, a woman has particular pride in, and therefore has a right to it. And therefore, even though the children of the Shvachas that the wife brought in as Nichsei Malug ought to be considered Peiros, and ought to be considered the husband's under all circumstances, Chazal said that if the woman wants, she could pay and keep those children. Al Shvach Bei Saviyah. Amrav Nachman, Hechnis La Ezel Chalba. If a woman brought into the marriage Nichsei Malug a goat that she brought for milk, Rochel Gizosai, a sheep that he brought for its wool, Tanagoilus Libetzosa, or a chicken that she brought to give eggs, Videkla Peresov, or a date tree for its fruit, Oich Vahalach Achetuk Lakarin. He could keep on eating them until the principal is consumed. And as the Rishonim explained, everybody will agree to this halacha, because since even after these animals die, or the fruit tree dries up, there's still something left. You have the hide of the animal, you have the wood of the tree, you have the feathers of the chicken, so therefore the offspring can be considered Paris, and it's not considered Karen. They're not considered Karen. Amar Rav Nachman, Eilei Glima, if a woman brought a coat as a Nechsimolog, Perihaver, wearing the coat is considered Paris. Why? Because Mechsibav Oz of Akalia, he could continue wearing it until the coat gets completely worn out. Command, Kaitana, the Tanya, Hamelech Vachoil, if somebody brought a salt pit, they used to have near the ocean, near the sea, such pit where the water would run in, and the sun would dry out the water, and they would be left with salt. Or a wife brought in a sand pit, Hareza Paris. The salt and the sand are considered produce because they never get depleted. But what about a situation that she brought in a pier shagofris, a sulfur pit, or machbayrish shatsarif? This was a kind of a herb that was used as a dye, and the sulfur and the tsarif could get depleted. Remei amakaren, that the sulfur is considered principal because the supply becomes depleted. Chamayim and Paris are considered Paris. Why? Because even after they become depleted, we're still left with the land under the pit, the land under the salt pit, under the area where there was the tsarif. And since something is left, that's the opinion that we just learned before. The Rav Nachman taught us that if something is left from the original item, then anything that comes out is considered Paris if something even as minimally valuable will be left. Rav Shimon Amar, Makom Shiyafa Kaichai. Rav Shimon said at the end of a Mishnah that when the husband has advantage, that when he marries her, there's a disadvantage when he divorces her, and vice versa. So we asked, when we learned the Mishnah of Shimon and Tanakama, where is the point of difference between Shimon and Tanakama? They're both agreeing that the attached fruit belongs to the husband. Amarava, the area of difference is Mechubarim B'Shas Yitzik B'Neyu, the fruit that's still attached when they got divorced. So according to Rav Shimon, the fruit that's attached to the ground where they get divorced, as we explained when we learned the Mishnah, goes to the wife. The Rabbanan, however, always have the husband's position stronger, and that fruit will be considered peiros that remain with the husband. Says the Mishnah, Nafon Avadim Shvachas Sekenim, if old slaves or old maid service fell to the woman as an inheritance, Yemachri, they should be sold, V'yilakch Menkaka, and land should be bought with the proceeds. Again, the Rishayim explain that since these slaves don't really have that much value, they're older and they're going to die, so that we have a situation where the keren will be completely depleted, and when the keren will be completely depleted, we said they should be sold and buy something with it. And buy kark with it. V'yilakch Menkaka, v'yilakch Peres. Says Rishayim ben Gamliel Oimer, Loi Timker, if the wife refuses to have them sold, even though the husband has a rightful claim that these are nichsim alog that are going to be very shortly totally invaluable, not valuable at all, she could still prevent them from selling them. Mibnei shehin shvach beis saviya, they consider the pride of her father's home, and she has the right to claim that they should not be sold. Nafla zeisim gefanim zakenim, old olive trees or old grapevines fell to her. Again, since they're going to shortly be completely worthless, yimachru, they should be sold, v'yilakach ben karka, v'oichel peiris. Yehudayim elay timka, she could again prevent the sale, neshen shvach beisavir, she could say that they represent the prestige of her father's home, that the father gave her these valuable fields with these trees on them. Amrav Kahana Marav, Machlaikis Shinafla Sada Shalom. The Machlaikis that we had at the end of the Mishnah is where the olive trees were, or the grapevines were in her field. She inherited the tree together with the field, so that when the trees die, the field will still be her principal. Ab Sadish Enishalom, if the father only had rights to the trees and the produce, but not to the field under them, the Rehakal Timkar. Everybody will agree that she has to sell them. And that's a case where the principal will be completely depleted, and everybody agrees that the husband could sell and buy land that will be constant, giving produce, the land being her keren, and the fruits being his peiros. Maskler of Yosef, ask a Rosh Avrei, Vadim Shvachas. Let's go to the Reish of our Mishnah, the case of slaves. It's again a situation where you only have the slave, and when the slave dies, there's nothing left. And yet we see Pligi, Eliyat Mehochiyat, just the opposite. Amrach, Kan Amrav, Machloikas B'Sadash Enishalah, where she only inherited the field, the trees. So there we have Machloikas, where the Tanakhama is saying that she can't say that the trees themselves represent any pride. And Rabbi Yehuda says that she can't say they represent some prestige. Alba Sadash Law, if she received the field, there, Dibrihaka Loi Timkar, everybody will agree that she could prevent the husband from selling them, Meshvach Beisaviyah, because if she has a field with trees, that's something certainly which is prestigious, something that represents pride, and she could prevent the husband from selling such nechsei maluk.